Good morning, everyone. Since I'm in the middle of a very intense Spanish class at Shoreline Community College, I'll use that as my excuse if I get mixed up and I get my verses all turned around. I did that the other day with the Spanish teacher. We were supposed to do a little composition, and I freaked out and I put in a Greek word instead of a Spanish word. I don't know how, but it was like, I'm doing my best to entertain Amelia, the Spanish teacher. Here's this Greek word for book, and I was trying to explain in Spanish how that I was working in a library, with a very specialized library with 3,000 volumes, and so I tried to put the word book in there. Well, that's Spanish for book is libros. Well, I somehow just thought of biblion, in the Greek. Well, that in Spanish means Bible. So here there's this image of this little wood construction library with 3,000 Bibles in it. You know, and I thought, oh, that was pretty stupid. Anyway, I have a birthday memory, and most of you realize by now, with some of the singing and all the stuff in the background, that today is my birthday. Are there any other in the back? Okay. Sorry, I thought there was enough. Maybe there are some extra sheets somewhere. Anyway, 57 years ago on my birthday, we had just moved to England, and it was a very stormy day. So this passage we've got before us today talks about a storm. It was a very windy and stormy day, and we lived just a block away from the seafront in a little town called Bexhill-on-Sea, and you could hear the waves roaring and pounding the beach from blocks away. So my dad thought it would be really interesting to take us on a little trip, my brother and I, to go to the seafront. So we won't go up to the promenade, as they call it, and here we're walking along the promenade, and right at that promenade, there's a little projection, you know, where you have railings, and you go out a little semicircular projection, and it's there's a high level, and then there's a lower level, and the waves were coming in, and they were pounding, seemed like they were far enough away so that it was safe to go down onto the lower level. We go down to that lower level, and here we're watching these waves come out. Well, you know how it is with these storms. There could be a rogue wave coming in, and there was one. And this rogue wave mounted up, and suddenly we saw this huge wave coming across, and it came way over us and knocked us to the ground. And if there had not been a railing there, it could have sucked us out to sea, and it could have been very dangerous. There was a railing, and so we're all just soaking wet. So we come home. Well, needless to say, my mother had some choice words for my father. He was the one that got the blame for that. So, but it kind of left a lasting impression on my mind, that stormy day on my birthday. Well, we're going to talk about a different kind of day. And the question here is, why are you so afraid? How is it that you have no faith? So this is the question. Now, what's the context? I'd just like to point out to you that there are two pages here. One side has the outline of the message. The other side has a series of texts. And the numbers are given there out of order on purpose. That was not one of the mix-ups that I was telling you about. So I Number two, right at the very top, that's the passage we're going to look at. But I put those numbers there because those numbers represent the order in which these passages were to take place chronologically in the history of the Gospels, as you take the Synoptic and John's Gospels together. So I just wanted to make that clear, and we're going to look at that number two at the top there, and just read a section there. This is taking the New King James Version. And these are the words that are found in Mark chapter 4, verses 1. I take the first two verses, and then I jump way down to verse 35. So it just gives you kind of a little bit of context. It says there in verse 1 of Mark chapter 4, "And again he began to teach by the sea, and a great multitude was gathered to him, so that he got into a boat and sat in it on the sea. And the whole multitude was on the land facing the sea." And I left some of those lines out because there was not enough room. So then it says, "Then he taught them many things by parables, and said to them in his teaching," and he started out, "Listen, behold, a sower went out to sow." And there are these a series of parables that we're so familiar with. Going down to verse 35. "On the same day, when evening has come," when the evening had come, "he said to them," that is to the disciples, "Let us cross over to the other side." Now when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was, so that it was, and other little boats were also with him, it says. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that it was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they awoke him and said to him, 'Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?' Then he arose and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, 'Peace, be still.' And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. But he said to them, 'Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?' And they feared exceedingly, and said to one another, 'Who can this be, that even the wind and the sea obey him?'" May God bless the reading of his word and our meditation to follow. Let's just have another little word of prayer. Oh God and Father, thank you for the instruction from the Word of God. Thank you for the wonderful songs that we can share and sing. And thank you for the things that we have revealed in your Word concerning people long ago. And yet, they are still relevant for us this very day. And so we just ask to apply these lessons to our lives so that we might benefit from what has been said and what has been recorded and written down. And we ask all this in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. So, as we look at the outline here, there's the introduction, and it says, there is a long and difficult day that Jesus had experienced. If you go back into chapter 3, you have part of that day. It's not just in chapter 4 of Mark. You go back into chapter 3, and there were conflicts with his family. There were conflicts with the religious leaders, and that was a great strain. And then you had a whole day of preaching from the boat. And then after declaring the parables to the people, then turning around and explaining to the disciples what the meaning of those parables would be. So it was a long, hard day. And as I think about it, I just think, wow, you know, this is, he must have been exhausted. And that would explain him sleeping like he did as the boat crossed the Sea of Galilee. Now, at the end of the day, he called the disciples and he told them to set sail for the other side of the lake. And evidently, as I was studying this, it said that let us cross over to the other side. Evidently, the Greek there indicates that there was a sense of urgency there. It was urgent that they do this. They went ahead and did it. And to start with, everything seemed quiet and calm. But as many of you realize, the Sea of Galilee is probably the lowest lake below sea level, 680 feet below sea level. And without warning, these tremendous winds can come funneling down through the hills and almost instantaneously churn up the Sea of Galilee so that it's just a raging, frothing mess. And this is what happened on that night. Evidently, it had a very great, severe and sudden onset. And so as they were making their way across, Jesus is asleep in the rear of the ship, and these disciples find themselves in a fight for their lives. This is a storm. This is a mother of all storms for them. It must have very much alarmed them. And for seamen, for people who are used to being out on the lake, it wasn't just a little storm. It was a great storm. And then I just put down a little statement there. Parables were supposed to be pictures of truths. But sometimes you have stories themselves that are like parables. And this is like a picture for all of us. Because we're all on a journey. And we don't know what's ahead for us. And we encounter storms in life. And I would say that probably there are people, as far as recent events, there are people who could stand up here and be more qualified to talk about the storms of life than I am. We all have storms of one form or another, but the sudden onset of the storm and the devastating consequences, there are people probably that would be more qualified to stand up here and describe how it felt to them. So as we observe the disciples on this night trip, what lessons can we learn? There's someone on the internet who he puts his sermons on the internet, and then he claims that no originality with his sermons. And so that's probably what I have to do right now. I just didn't have the space for it to say that I borrowed this outline, some of the basic outlines here, from a particular person that I saw. Well, this kind of fit with what we're going to look at today. So the broad outline is that there were just some great dangers there. And then the second part is that there are some great doubts. And then third, there are some great discoveries. So I just tried to lump them all into three categories there. And to also say that as we look on the other side of the page and you see lessons learned while with Jesus in a boat, you can get a feel for some of the other times where Jesus was in a boat with the disciples, and where they were in a learning experience. They were being trained. And just before we look at this particular storm, look at what happened in Luke 5. So go down to number 1 on that other side there. And it kind of reminds you a little bit about what's happened here. He had been preaching to the multitudes as well, but this was an earlier time. And this was at that time when he was calling for the disciples, Peter, Andrew, James, and John. And he'd been speaking to this multitude, and then he says, "Launch out into the deep and let down your nets." And here, instead of it being a storm, it's catching fish. Simon answered and said, "Master, we have toiled all night and caught nothing. Nevertheless, at your word, I will let down the net." The reason I put these scriptures together is that you can kind of see, you can get a picture of kind of the training process of what's going on with the disciples. And so even at that time, when you see them right at the beginning of Christ's ministry, you can see that, well, there's Peter was willing, at the word that Jesus gave, to do something that would not have been commended itself to his rational way of thinking. He thought he knew way more about how to catch fish than Jesus. But I said, "But because you said so, I'm going to do it." And when they had done this, they caught great number of fish, and their net was breaking. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came and filled both the boats so that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." So I think that that's a very good place to start if we're looking at, what am I going to learn from the Master? What am I going to learn from Jesus? Well, the first thing we have to learn, of course, is that we're sinners. And this is something that Peter learned very early on, that he was a sinful man. He knew that. He could tell that. But he also knew that Jesus was different from himself. And they were all astonished, it goes on to say. And they couldn't believe what had happened. And Jesus says, "Do not be afraid." So that, you see that, notice that word fear? Notice the word fear in the Bible. Probably the most given, the most frequently given command in the Bible. Fear not. I remember reading that someplace. Fear not. One of the most given command in the Bible, fear not. Now, why would that be? When you go back to the very beginning of Genesis, and where do we start to see the word fear? In the garden, after Adam and Eve had sinned, and they were hiding from God in the evening. And what was the matter? It says that they hid themselves because they were afraid, because they had disobeyed God. Right from the start, you have fear once sin enters the world. So this theme of fear, it's something that plagues the human race. And why is that? Well, because we're sinners and we have separated ourselves from God, and we are in a condemned state. But Jesus said in this particular occasion, "Do not be afraid. From now on, you will catch men." And then it goes on to say in the next verse, "So they forsook all and followed him." And you think, well, okay, that's the end of story. That's good. Everyone lived happily ever after. Well, not quite. You have now what we just saw in this particular story. And then you go down to 3 and you see this time there's a different kind of test. You know, you have these miracles and you have these teachings. And then it's like... okay, now I've taught you this. This is really fresh in my mind because the Spanish class again. The teacher She tells us something about Spanish. I said, now we're going to practice it. And you're going to put it into practice. And then you're really going to put it into practice when you have a test or an exam. And you're going to have a blank sheet in front of you. And I'm going to ask questions. And you're going to have to put it down. And that's when the mind starts to do weird things. Anyway, it's amazing how the mind can go blank. I thought I knew it. I thought I looked at that. I'd written it down. I thought I knew it. I thought I knew it. And what was that? Anyway, so I kind of relate to these disciples. What they're forgetting things, you know. And I can relate to that. So here you have this. Now this next number three is right after the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000. So you've gone a ways beyond the storm scene that we've just read about under number two. And it says, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat, this is after the feeding of the 5,000, and go before him to the other side. It kind of looks familiar, does it not? And while he sent the multitudes away. And then it says that, while they were out in the boat, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. But the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. But you know, you see now that they've progressed to another point. Here, they are having problems out in the middle of the Sea of Galilee, but this time Jesus isn't with them. But Jesus is with them. He's praying for them on the mountainside. And that was something they were going to have to learn, that just because they can't see Jesus there, that doesn't mean he's not there with them. And that's something we have to continually teach ourselves. And then it says, the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, or terrified, "It is a ghost." And they cried out for fear. And this fear was not well founded. But this is what they thought. And they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I. Do not be afraid." Notice that instruction again, not to be afraid. And then we have the scene where Peter tries to get out. And there are all kinds of lessons here that we can't stop and dwell on. But here Peter gets out and walks on the water. None of the other disciples tried to do that, but he did. And so far, so good. And then he starts looking around at the water and the waves and gets his eyes off Jesus. And we know that what happened. And, "Oh, you of little faith," says Jesus, "why did you doubt?" And so you see this theme here. We have the theme followed of faith and fear and doubts. And now here we have them saying, they forsook all and followed him. And then we have the words, who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him? And now we have those words that end up, "Truly you are the Son of God." So, wow, that's a statement. They've arrived, right? Well, then, a few chapters on in Mark, this is after the feeding of the 4,000. Now, the disciples had forgotten to take bread, and they did not, so this is number four down at the bottom here. They did not have more than one loaf with them in the boat. Then he charged them, Jesus, because he'd just been in a conflict with the religious leaders, saying, "It is take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod." And they reasoned among themselves, saying, "It's because they have no bread." But Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, "Why do you reason because you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive nor understand?" Here you have a loaf of bread, and they say, "Well, we blew it. There are all those baskets of bread that we left behind." And here they forget about the fact, oh, by the way, we've got a loaf of bread here, and the one who created all that bread is with us in the boat. And so he's saying, "Do you not yet perceive nor understand? Is your heart still hardened?" Notice that, hardened heart. Having eyes, do you not see? Having ears, do you not hear? Ah, boy, that must have hurt, because those were words that were applied to the non-believers, the people out there in the Jewish nation. These are followers of his that he's asking questions. Are you like them? And do you not remember? What happened? What just happened? Yeah. And then he asked them about the 5,000, the feeding of the 5,000, and the feeding of the 4,000. So then he finally says, how is it that you do not understand? And so you see that this is a checkered career. This education process is not just something that's just going onward and upward. Everything is just sailing smoothly. It was not like that at all. Up and down and up and down. And sometimes you just think they're making progress. And then a little later on, Peter makes that amazing confession. And we have that question that Quincy was referring to, or Steve, rather. Who do men say that I am? And so we that was one of the questions we looked at, was it not? And so that's going to come a little bit after this. And so that's a wow. Peter really got it. And then he turns around and rebukes the Lord when Jesus said he's going to the cross. So all the nice things that Jesus said about Peter, and then he said, get thee behind me, Satan. And because he had totally gotten off track. So that education process, I just thought you could maybe get a sense of that by looking at these different passages and seeing how the Lord was trying to bring them to a greater understanding of himself. So getting back to our story, not just leaving them out there in the boat in the middle of the Sea of Galilee, drowning. It was a sudden storm, and it was very, very severe. Look at what it says here in verse 37. And the waves beat into the boat, and the word there, it's like continuously. It's just like one wave after another. They just kept more water. And this way, the boat was going to sink. There's no ifs or buts about it. I mean, that boat was not going to survive. And nor were they. It was already filling, it says. And I just put in these quotes because I thought that they would be... I just appreciated them in light of what was going on here with the disciples. Jeremy Taylor. I need to look him up, find out where he was from. But these are words that I thought were really appropriate. We are safer in the middle of a storm with God than anywhere else without him. That's the first quote. I think that was really worth noticing. And this other one is from Warren Wiersbe. The greatest danger was not the wind or the waves. It was the unbelief in their hearts. So I think that's a pretty insightful statement as well. The greatest danger was not the wind or the waves. It was the unbelief in their hearts. Now, it's very interesting. You have this scene here as kind of full of irony, because you have the disciples that are just all shaken up because of this storm. They think they're going to die any moment. Reminds me of words of my sister-in-law when she was river rafting down the white water river. And she just, this was not her favorite thing to do anyway. And she was just yelling out, we're going to die. We're all going to die. If you can imagine her saying that. Well, so. Anyway, that was sort of their sentiment. They thought that they were going to die. And so might as well let Jesus know before it's finally too late. It's just amazing because after a bit, when Jesus stills the storm, everything's calm outside. Yeah, the waves and the winds, they're just totally gone. However, there's still a raging storm going on inside the disciples, because now they've got another problem. You've got a problem, first of all, because you think you're going to die from the storm. The second is, if you got someone powerful enough to stop the storm just like this, what are you dealing with? How are you going to be able to make anything of this individual? Because this is something totally otherworldly than what you're used to. That there's a fear there. There's a different kind of fear, and we'll get to that in a moment. So notice what it says here in verse 38. But he was in the stern asleep, and I thought this was something that was very interesting. They woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And at times, I just wrote this down, at times God seems asleep. When we call out and he doesn't seem to answer, where is God? I don't know how which of you might identify with that statement. We see the psalm, and this is just one example. Psalm 44:23. Awake. He's trying to wake up God. Awake. Why are you sleeping, O Lord? So it seems like that, right? It seems like that. And that brings us to something that is really amazing in this story. And that is that, just think of it. Here is God himself. This is the Son of God here in the boat. Why would they think that what's going through their minds when they see Jesus asleep? They think he's a normal human being. And in a sense, they were right. Jesus was 100% human. The thing about it, though, is Jesus was and is 100% God. So you have someone 100% human, 100% God. And I'm sure when Peter looked back years and years later, maybe he was thinking about this story. Maybe some of the other events that occurred when Jesus was here on earth. But in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 7, I didn't write in this reference, but Peter says, "Casting all your cares upon him, for he cares for you." By then, he had learned that lesson. At this time, it seemed like he didn't care. It seemed like he didn't care. I can't speak for all of you in this room, but does it sometimes seem like God doesn't care? I think that there are those experiences where it feels like that's the case. And there's a kind of like a testing process. Notice this little quotation from Spurgeon. "God is too wise to err, so he won't make a mistake. Too good to be unkind. Leave off doubting him and begin to trust him. For in so doing, you will put a crown on his head." I'm still trying to, I'm pondering those words. But I just think we bless God when we go through the experience. It's like was quoted earlier about Job, where we give God the glory even though it seems like he doesn't care, even though it looks like things are just falling apart or that there's a terrible thing that has happened and I can't explain it, but I know that God cares. And that act of faith is one of those crowns we can place at the feet of Jesus. He says wearing it, putting a crown on his head, but just one of the crowns we can place before the Lord when we have that kind of faith. they doubted God's commitment. Look at what it says here. We are perishing. We are. This is a statement of this. There's no hope. And I just want to leave these words with you in from Hebrews 13:5. I will never leave you nor forsake you. And I would like to double check on the wording here, but in Hebrews 13:5, the word to leave, to let sink. That's interesting as it applies in this particular situation. So I have to get that sinking sensation. And then they doubted what Jesus had told them. See, what did he say? Well, you look earlier, and it says there, let us cross over to the other side. That means his intent was to go to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. That was where he was going, and that was his intention. And that seemed like totally out of the realm of possibility to them. But those were the words he said. And so I just like to gather some of these characteristics, the things that they would have discovered that night. Now, did they remember all of these things? I think they needed to be, these statements, these things had to be pounded into them. They needed to be reminded over and over and over. But first of all, you have the fact that here was one that had complete power. The rebuking of the wind and the sea, peace be still. I just wanted to make a little note here that hold your peace, be muzzled. These were words that Jesus spoke to the evil spirit, to the demon, back in Mark 1 and verse 25. And when we think about the power of God, and as we see it in Jesus, Jesus has the same power. It says, look at what is promised us. All power or all authority is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Matthew 28:18. Those are words that are passed down to us as a promise. Jesus has that kind of authority. And so he's handing that, and he says, I have that power, so if I tell you to do something, I can tell you to go someplace, that's what you can do with that assurance. Look at what it says there in Psalm 107. And verse 29, it says, of God, he maketh the storm a calm, so that the waves thereof are still. Now it was not suddenly in the Sea of Galilee. Evidently, winds can come suddenly, and suddenly those winds can stop. But just because the wind stops, that doesn't mean that the waves stop. They're still chopping around for quite a while afterwards. But in this case, it was a double miracle. The wind stopped. The wave stop. It's like suddenly all these waves, and suddenly, just like a giant hand, it just come down on top of all that water, and it was just still. Now that really freaked out the site. That was something that they had never seen before. That was totally unprecedented. He maketh the storm calm, so that the waves thereof are still. It's almost like it's a prophecy of what Jesus was going to do that night on the Sea of Galilee. Be quiet, hold thy peace. And same idea there in Psalm 89, verse 9. Then you have the promises. He goes, let us cross over. Then it says in chapter 5 and verse 1, they came to the other side of the sea. So they reached there. So it shows that there was he was able to fulfill that. And I just thought of that, those words that were actually uttered by Balaam, of all people, an unholy prophet if ever there was one. But he was under the Spirit of God was carrying him along in spite of his ulterior motives. And he says concerning God in Numbers 23, verse 19, has he said, speaking of God, has he said and shall he not do it? Or has he spoken and shall he not make it good? Those are words that we can take as well. I mean, if God says something, we can count on it. Promises. So we have power, we have promises, we have his presence. It says that they took him along in the boat there. Just as he was. I mean, they didn't do any preparations. He was exhausted. He just said, let's go to the other side. They didn't make any preparations. He just leaned back on that pillow, fell asleep. And then I just thought we go on with it. Matthew 28, where it says, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. So there's a promise as it's extended to us. And it was given to the disciples, but it's extended to us. I like this little quote from Brian Bell, who's a pastor of a Calvary Chapel down in Southern California. His goal is to strengthen us and not shipwreck us. He wanted them to grow in faith, so he wanted there to be a change from the fear to this a different kind of fear. Look a moment here at what it says here about look at verse 40 as you turn the page over. He said to them, why are you so fearful? That verse 40 there is the word for timidity. Kind of if you're timid, you get cowardly. Afraid. The other one is, and then he goes on, how is it that you have no faith? And there's a key. If they had had faith, they wouldn't have had that kind of fear. But then it says, and they feared. That's a different word. They feared exceedingly. There, it's more like the word for an awestruck fear. That's kind of a healthy fear compared to the other type of fear that Jesus was referring to. So I just wanted to make that point as we're looking at that. Their fear was not grounded on anything. That reminds me, I'm just maybe going to close with a little story here. We have fears, and it turns out that the fears are not well grounded. And so I was looking through this these letters of my dad, and sometimes you can remind yourself of, oh, wow, I remember that way back when. He describes it as a funny incident, but we must have, at one point or another, gone to visit an old inn that was a few miles down the road from where we used to live. And this inn, it had a kind of a sinister reputation because it was used for smuggling, and it had been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. And also, there had been some really nasty things that had taken place, including one of the owners of that inn had discovered that his wife was being unfaithful, and so he had murdered her lover and her in a most gruesome way. And then later on, there was this ghost that kept appearing in this inn. So that was the background. She went, oh boy, I don't think I want to stay there all night. Anyway, so that was the background. So I didn't tell you, he's writing to his mother, a funny incident while we were at the Burtons, that was my former tutor, there was just room for one of the boys to sleep at the Burtons' cottage, and therefore Mrs. Burton had arranged for one of them to sleep next door. Okay, well, that might not be too bad. Mrs. Burton suggested flipping a coin to see which one would sleep there
and it fell to Kelly. He didn't show it at the moment, but later upstairs, it was apparent that he didn't want to at all. So then he says, anyway, we prevailed upon Sumner, that they called me instead of Rocky, to go instead, and he did with pretty good will, though not without hinting that he would just as soon not have gone as well. The place he was to sleep was upstairs over an old inn, the Wherry Inn, and it was a very quaint little room with dormers, but very nice. Mrs. Burton and I went over with him, met the innkeeper and his wife. Evidently, Mrs. Burton explained that it was a 17th century inn. I didn't say anything, but next morning I told him that when Mrs. Burton mentioned it was 17th century, I thought immediately of the Mint House, that other inn. Yes, and by the way, I thought of that too. But didn't say so because I didn't want him to be thinking about it. He said, these were my words, don't worry, I thought of it. Well, you know, it was used by smugglers. I kind of come in there and I go, okay, I wonder where's the secret passageway. You know, this is an old, I've never been in here before. It turned out all the fears are groundless. we have a lot of groundless fears. Some of those dangers are real. But we have a real God who can really help us and be the one who can take care of the problems that we face. And we have the peace that passes understanding, which I didn't put down as a quotation there. But that Psalm 121, verse 4, behold, he that keepeth Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. I thought that was interesting, given the fact that they thought Jesus was asleep and wasn't going to be able to look after them. And look at what David says. He said, I will both lie down in peace, old inn or no old inn, I will both lie down in peace and sleep. For you alone, O Lord, make me dwell safely. You will keep him in perfect peace, said Isaiah, whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. So what manner of man is this, was their question. And I just thought I'd finish with Colossians 1, these two verses. And this is the very one who was sleeping. So you have the manhood and the deity of Christ. For by him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth. So he's a creator, this one that was sleeping in the back of that boat. Visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, he's eternal, and in him all things consist, are held together. This is the very one that was in that boat that was asleep. It's amazing. Well, our time is up. We've gone over, sorry. So anyway, why are you so fearful? Why are you afraid? How is it that you have no faith? And may God help us to have less of that fear of timidity and more of the fear of all of God. And may we be growing in faith, and may this be a blessing to us as we go from here. And now let's close in prayer. Oh God and Father, thank you for your wonderful promises. Thank you for the wonderful way you show your power. And even in such a case as this where Jesus looked just like an ordinary man sleeping in that boat, and the disciples thought they were done for, it was all finished. And yet we laugh at them, but then we turn around and we make the same mistake ourselves. And so may help us, Lord, to learn, like the disciples, to learn to trust you more day by day. And oh God and Father, we know that there's some people that the storms have raged, and there have been a lot of things that can't be explained. And yet, oh God, we know that you care for us. we can cast all your cares upon you because you care for us. And we just pray that help us to accept that by faith. And now we ask it all in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.